Let's go black background, dark times, the FFP cloud hanging over us. Hello and welcome to the Clan Blue podcast, something a little bit different for you today. We're going to be talking about FFP / PSR and Villa's accounts that came out at the start of this week. Now, later in this show, we're going to be talking to Dave Powell, who's Reach PLC's kind of financial expert, and he'll be talking us through the figures and what they mean and what they prove, what they show Villa have been up to effectively. Before we go to Dave and before we have a bit of a longer chat, John, just very quickly, from what you saw from the accounts on Monday, I think it was, are you concerned? Are you worried about the position Villa are in or not?
No, I wouldn't say I'm concerned or worried, to be honest. I think obviously it's a negative thing to have nearly £120 million worth of losses over the course of 2023. But I think you need to kind of think about, well, you know, what does this mean exactly and why is it? And I think you cannot quite easily answer those questions. So why is it? And firstly, Villa have had to spend money to get to where they are. We're fourth in the division, and I know Unai Emery has kind of enabled that more than anything. So you could argue, you know, obviously we shouldn't have signed Coutinho, we shouldn't have appointed Steven Gerrard, all these different things that have obviously contributed to the amount of losses we've had. But a large majority of that money spent has brought us to where we are. So I think if you asked me last year, would you take, and you know, I think we'll qualify for Champions League this season in this situation in 2024, March the 5th or 6th, wherever this podcast goes out, would you want Villa to be in this situation where they're, what, 10 games away, 11 games away from Champions League football, but they might have to sell one of their or two of their or however many, you know, their star players to raise money? Or I think most Villa fans would have snapped your hand off for that, because this is a situation that Villa are in control of. And I think that's the kind of the key point for me. Obviously, a lot of clubs in the Premier League have struggled with, you know, PSR, two of them, Everton and Forest, haven't complied and are facing the kind of repercussions of that. But Villa say they are compliant at this stage, which is good. But as I say, they have a lot of assets in their team. They also have a lot of big earners, and there will be opportunities for them to make money, if that makes sense. So this is a completely controllable situation. As I say, Villa just wouldn't be in the situation that they are right now in terms of on the pitch and, you know, fourth in the table in Europe. You know, come on, this is like every Villa fan. You know, God, we were almost dreaming of finishing the top half. You know, how many years? Dreaming of being in the Premier League again. So we've come a long, long, long way. And we had to spend money to get here. As I say, some buyers have worked out better than others. But ultimately, we were going to have to spend a lot of money. Revenue streams are going to increase. So Adidas, hopefully Champions League. Playing in Europe helps that as well. We have the Ateros deal as well. So there's a lot of positives there. It's just that right now, as you look at it, for 2023, it doesn't read well. The context I'm trying to kind of explain why it's not as bad a situation as what it might have been for other clubs, should we say.
I'm going to hand over to Dave Powell now and future me, because I've not recorded this bit yet, and he's going to talk through what the figures show and what they mean, and I'll just ask him. I'm not a financial expert, he is. I'll probably ask him some stupid questions, but I think it's good just to lay out a 10-15 minute segment of just what the facts, basically. Yeah. And then you and me can come back and chat a little bit more about it. Right, Dave, thank you for joining us on the podcast. You're our financial expert. I'm not that. I'll probably be asking you some stupid questions here. So if there are any stupid questions, feel free to just bat them away as such. How are you, mate? You okay this morning?
Really good. Yeah, really good. And looking forward to making my debut on this podcast, which I've not been on the other one before.
Yeah.
So, you're breaking new ground.
Can you just explain what these accounts actually show? Like, what is the bottom line?
Well, the club posted a loss of just shy of 120 million, so it's 119.6 for the financial year. I mean, but as ever, it's always important to look at these things as a snapshot in time. I mean, we're looking 9-10 months back now, and the club's financial situation is different than it was last season for this financial year. But everyone's been really, really concerned about PSR and how, you know, the what happened with Everton, the 10-point deduction last year, which obviously they've had reduced to six. I think sparked some concerns around club execs and also obviously fans around the fact that PSR has actually some teeth and there are a lot of clubs who are quite close to it. I think Villa are close enough to it to be concerned and mindful that they have to watch what they spend. But obviously these accounts which they've published this week were sent to the Premier League before the end of December for them to audit and have a look to ensure that they haven't broken PSR regulations, and they haven't for the 2022-23 period. So that's the long and the short of it. They're not at risk certainly for this period of a PSR breach. And interesting, before the accounts dropped, there was an extension request for Companies House to extend the end of the financial year to the end of June, so another month, making it a 13-month year. And that could be impactful because there could be expected revenue to drop in between that month. They could be looking at player sales, and they could put off player purchase until after that period as well. So it's as ever with football, it's moving parts, and this is a snapshot in time, 9, 10 months ago, when really Villa's focus now is trying to manage the situation to remain PSR compliant until next year kicks in, and hopefully Champions League football, which will be significant, as well as a number of commercial deals, which we'll see an uptick. I mean, the move from Castore to it is Adidas, isn't it? I think that'll be significant. And I imagine once you get in the Champions League as well, it opens up yourself up to other commercial partners. Obviously, that's not been achieved yet, but that's part of the plan. And obviously, to invest in that, in achieving that plan, you need to invest in the first team squad, and that is largely where the losses have come from for this financial year we're looking at.
Yeah. For those that are watching on YouTube, I've got my laptop in front of me here with questions and some notes, because I don't normally do this, Dave, but I've actually put some prep into this show, so forgive me for kind of just reading things I've prepared. Can we first of all just kind of clarify how this kind of three-year rolling PSR rules work, that a club can make a loss of X amount over the course of a three-year period, and if the club exceeds that limit, they're then in trouble of points deductions or transfer bans and that kind of thing. Is that accurate?
So it's 105 million over a three-year period, but there is the caveats attached to that. You can deduct losses which are attributed to investment in the women's team, community infrastructure, academy. So Villa are quite good at detailing these things. So I think this year, the actual full accounts only dropped late last night, so I've only had a chance to briefly skirt through them this morning. But I mean, things such as women's football for this year, that's 4.4 million, which was invested into the women's side of the game at the club during the 2022-23 period, which is deductible from those losses. But you're looking at a three-year period. So over the 3 years, I think Villa comes in around 187 million in terms of losses. But it's important to note that the first year of that, to 2021, actually incorporates two COVID impacted seasons, so they were balled into one, and COVID losses were deductible, and that was to the tune of 56 million, something like that. So for Villa, and there's been significant investment in the infrastructure of the club as well. You'll have to forgive my ignorance in terms of I've forgotten the name of the academy site, which was built adjacent to
Brookvale, I think.
That's it. So there was a considerable investment made in that. There's been a capital commitment for infrastructure investment of, I think it's about £13.5 million in this current accounting period, which we're focusing on, the 2022-23 period. So that, again, is deductible. So once you start tagging all these things together, investment into the women's game, and that 4.4 million is just this year for the women's game, then you've got the academy, there'll be investment in that infrastructure. You start to get to a point where Villa's losses are probably skirting around the 80 to 90 mark, all told, which means that they've probably got some room for manoeuvre, but not enough to be super comfortable with the fact, with this summer we'll probably have to involve some, balancing the books in terms of incomings and outgoings if they want to make big additions. But to your point initially about PSR, so the Everton test case, well, Everton has been a test case really for this punishment. The appeal the report of the appeal brought up that any clubs really in breach of PSR are to expect a points deduction. I think that's been clarified. I think any club found guilty of breaching PSR and not being able to make a case for otherwise, I think is expecting a points deduction. So I think Everton, if they can't prove their case this time round, will suffer the same, a similar fate, a lesser term because they've already been impacted, but Forest will likely too. So it is a concern, obviously, for Villa moving forward. They're looking up the upper echelons of the table now. So, likewise, if you're a mid-table side, maybe losing 5-6 points doesn't really impact a season greatly, but Villa aren't looking to be a mid-table side anymore. They're looking to be side chasing for Europe. And if you're not PSR compliant and you run the risk of losing points, that can be incredibly impactful, which... But I don't, I don't think they are. I think they are within the confines of it, albeit they probably need to just be mindful of what they do this summer.
So that 120 million that we've found out about this week, that doesn't include the deductions that you can make on infrastructure and the women's team. So let's say that's 30 million. It's actually 120 minus 30, or does that 120 already include those deductions?
No. That's the losses. These are the audited accounts, the losses that they've made. And once you roll all these losses into one, so if you look at the 3-year period for Villa, it's about 187 million. They will be. You can start deducting back all the costs which are attributed for over those three years. So pretty soon that 187, you probably find yourself you're getting below the 100 mark, and that's really where Villa need to be. I don't think they have a lot of room for manoeuvre. But other clubs are in that situation. Arsenal are in that situation where they don't have much room for manoeuvre when it comes to PSR. The only clubs that really do are Liverpool and Spurs. And say for Brentford, I imagine. But that's kind of where we're at. I mean, but in terms of the big six and the teams pushing for Champions League places, which Villa are among those, they're not alone in that. Arsenal, Manchester United, again, similar story.
So the kind of buffer, I guess, for the if you're in breach of any rule break is 105 million over 3 years. Villa's losses show 187. So Villa need to kind of find at least, what's the maths on that, 80 odd million deductions over the course of 3 years to be compliant, which is expected. That Villa aren't, basically the question fans will ask once they find out about things like this is, oh my God, are we going to get a points deduction? Are we in trouble? Can we say that the answer to that is categorically no? Or is that premature?
From my own, this is me looking at it from a fairly basic standpoint. But I mean, the figures add up. I mean, they attributed 56 million pounds worth of losses to COVID, and now that period's still included in this 3-year cycle, because those 2 years were averaged together. So that's 56 million gone there. The 4.4 million I've just given you for women's football is gone. There's 13.5 million. Capital commitment from NWSE for infrastructure investment this year. So all this starts to accrue, and before you know it, you are compliant. And the club have said themselves they are remaining with it compliant with it, within PSR, and that's I think they have been good owners. Nassif Sawiris is one of in terms of people with wealth and ability to finance. I mean, he's one of the best, but he also knows his business. So it's one of those. I mean, they know full well now. All clubs are scrambling to make sure they are PSR compliant when the kind of the Premier League knock and ask to audit these accounts. Summer business is when you'll probably see how much that may have been. Now, Villa spent in January, didn't they? So, albeit fairly, it wasn't a huge sum, but it was significant enough, but it's again, it shows that they probably had some room to manoeuvre in this current financial year, which for Villa will now end of June instead of May. So they're probably looking at just trying to tack on a few more commercial deals, maybe some player trading, just to improve the situation. Because ultimately, I think they'll want to have a good go at it in the summer if they can. But that might mean they have to move some pieces around.
Yeah, the very basic analysis would be that if Villa thought they were on the verge of a points deduction or a transfer embargo or whatever, you don't spend 15 million on Morgan Rodgers in the January window, do you? You think, oh, maybe we should hold back a little bit. Maybe that is too basic a point to look at, but that's kind of my assessment of it. Like, if you thought, oh no, we're going to be in trouble this year, we don't spend any money in January just to be absolutely safe.
It's not looked on favourably by the Premier League if you are having PSR. Yeah. It used to be engaged in the transfer market, and they've made that point clear in previous correspondence they've had with the club. So I don't see it a huge buffer. It's very difficult to give hard figures in terms of where they're actually at in their PSR position, because the full accounts have dropped. I've just had sight of them this morning, and it probably involves a look at the holding company as well to see where they're at. But my estimation's between 80 and 90 they're probably at, so they have some room for manoeuvre.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about Champions League qualification. Then, should Villa get there, how much will that help the club's finances? And does that come into next year's accounts, or is it the year after? Like, so for example, is obviously Villa in the Europa Conference League this season. Does that show in this year's accounts, or is the Conference League in next year, and then the Champions League will be the one after?
The Conference League will be in this current financial year. So okay. This is so 2023-24. And you won't know the results of that until we talk in 12 months' time in March 2025. Likewise, Villa's, if they get in the Champions League, you won't see the impact of that until the 2024-25 accounts, which will be made public in early 2026. So,
come back in 2 years' time, everyone.
This is the strange thing about accounting. So. We always we're looking just in the past at a year, which, you know, 10 months has passed since these accounts. And we are operating in the here and now with Villa in the Conference League. Important for Villa is they made European football last year in any sense, because a good performance in the Conference League this year improves their UEFA coefficient, which in turn provides more value for them in the Champions League next year if they get there. So Newcastle made around 30 to 35 million from their trip to the Champions League this year, which is great, but that's Liverpool, if they qualified just and got dumped out of the group stages, losing every game, would still expect to make 55 to 60 million.
Because they've got like that European pedigree that Newcastle didn't.
Better coefficient. Now, Villa have had European football in recent times, so that is impactful. So I expect that will be a considerable rise to Villa. But then you have the chance to pick up prize money in the Champions League through victories in the group stages, qualification for the knockout stages, etc. So it's hugely impactful. But you also have be able to market the football club as a Champions League football club. So you're going to market for new shirt sponsors. I don't know how long... again, it's my ignorance. I don't know how long is left on Villa's front of shirt sponsor. I think it's PK8, is it?
I think it was like a multi-year deal, but there were kind of rumours of, well, they could cut that short for somebody more reputable, for want of a better phrase.
This happens. I mean, clubs can renege on deals and buy themselves out if they think there's a better option. I don't know whether that will happen. I'm just kind of spitballing there. But yeah. But there are opportunities to increase commercial revenue, to heighten the brand. And it comes at an important time to be part of the Champions League if Villa can do it, because the Swiss model from 2024 kicks in, which is more money. So it's going to be a league system.
Yeah.
More money in the pot for clubs. And also the money is increased for Premier League merit payments, so as by virtue of the new Premier League deal. And that will only increase further by the fact that the next international rights deal will be increased again. Mm. So there's lots of needles moving in the right direction for Villa. Nothing locked in, though. So, I mean, that's the thing about, which is why North American owners tend to get so frustrated with the European system, is that it's financial security is far less than what they may receive in North America, where there's no promotion, relegation, the media deals are 10 years and there's complete financial security. And then there's salary caps as well. So there's always, the league always tries to find some level of equilibrium when it when it comes to competitive balance. So different in the Premier League, obviously, the so-called kind of big six will no doubt feel their noses pushed out by this season by Villa muscling in on the plan. But that's the plan is to stay there. And obviously you need to succeed and remain there to for the plan to work. So Newcastle, a fall off this season, a second season in the Champions League would have really given them far more revenue power to spend and allow that GIF plan to kick in. Whereas Villa will be looking to try and do the same so they can spend themselves because they have significant backing. So it's just about being able to spend.
Yeah. Let's talk about player sales, and this is another big question that fans will have and that they will rightly be worried about. Now, me and John have already spoken in this podcast, or it's coming up after this segment, I can't remember, about like how we kind of trust in the guys that are at the club, that if we do make a big sale, then there's no better team to kind of fill those holes and recruit well and still kind of push Villa on to go and be Villa 2.0 kind of thing. Villa, we're not saying that Villa need to make a sale because they're so close to FFP that they're going to be punished, so we have to sell somebody. But that is the question that gets asked. Do Villa have to sell to buy? Or would it be a case that if Villa do make a big sale, it's because there's a Jack Grealish-esque release clause in somebody's contract, and there is interest in our players, there is bound to be. We're fourth in the league, we have a lot of good quality players. Interest is inevitable from these super clubs that can spend, you know, what it feels like they can spend what they want. So I'm not saying that Villa have to make a sale because of a threat of punishment, but it feels inevitable that at some point we will see Douglas Luiz to Liverpool for 100 million or whatever as an example, and that might feel like the end of the world to some Villa fans, and I don't want to lose any of these players because they're brilliant. Your manoeuvrability in the accounts with that transfer fee does allow you then to go and spend and be a bit more fluid.
Liverpool sold Philip Coutinho for $145 million, and they reinvested large chunks of that money in two players, which ended up being transformational. I think player trading is something which is a great way to impact your ability to spend in terms of PSR. So some clubs are great at player trading. Chelsea have been great at player trading, which means that despite all that huge outlay, they still managed to remain compliant for the 2020-2023 period, because when you sell a homegrown player, it's pure profit. You don't have to find a profit over and above what you paid, which still has book value on the account. You just book that. So Jack Grealish at Villa was just pure profit. So you're not going to find a Jack Grealish every summer. But I think it's one of those, if the recruitment team can identify someone who has significant need to spend, but it does inevitably sometimes lead to with the revenues as they are, unless there is money coming in to make up that additional cost that you're going to burden the balance sheet with, you have to look at player trading. But I doubt that Villa would be wanting to cash in on players that they require to take them to the Champions League. So you have to, it's risk and reward. So is it better to see a small profit and try and achieve the same thing or better with players that you know by losing a Douglas Luiz, or is it better to hold on to him and then try and make up that money by achieving prize money through the Champions League, through additions to a higher place in the Premier League, etc. So it's all about risk and reward. There's no simple answer. I mean, Villa don't want to be, I don't think, Brighton, because I think they want to be a club which produces players like Brighton, but ultimately keeps them and then sees them flourish with themselves. Whereas Brighton, that is the model. It's acquire undervalued talent from Europe and South America, give it a platform, and then, which they did. It's been quite successful, the relationship they've had with Brighton, with Union Saint-Gilloire, who Tony Bloom, their owner, owns. So the likes of Cara Matona went there and kind of got game time and became a sharp player. So Villa have, I think, NWSC have interest in Portugal today with Vitória. I think they alluded how much they held at the start of the season, but the Portuguese market is ripe. So I think Villa want to try and... Everyone wants to think smarter now. No one I had a conversation with a European team owner last week, and we were talking about the transfer market and its sustainability. I mean, things don't go up forever and ever. People aren't going to pay more and more and more and more because it's anti-Darwinian to think that things go up forever. So there will be a correction at some point in the transfer market, likely when media revenues start to dip domestically, which they're showing some signs of. They're stagnating even the next period, even though the value's gone up, the actual value per game has gone less because they've given away more games. But there is people now want more value for what they spend, unless you're Todd Bowley, of course. I mean, that's kind of an open checkbook to spend whatever on whoever. But people want more value, so there's a reason why Manchester United have tried to acquire Dan Ashworth, the sporting director, because he was the man who shaped the Brighton plan. And this is a thread which goes through restructuring and management at top clubs, because they want to acquire players at the just before the stage of when they start getting real value. So I'm sure Chelsea would have loved to have spotted Enzo Fernandez 9 months earlier when Benfica paid 10 million for him or whatever it was, and then sold him to Chelsea 9 months later and 17 games later for 106 million. So that's where the focus will be, I think. So I think that, but it's a long-winded answer to your question, but I think in terms of player sales, everything is relevant to the situation. So it depends who comes in with a huge offer and what else is on the table, because the cost of acquisition for players is expensive. If you are trying to replace like for like, if you think you can get better than what you've sold, then you're likely to pursue a player sale. But if you're diminishing the quality of the squad, then it's just not going to work. So everything, I think the idea for Villa now will be whatever is done will be for the greater good of improving the whole squad as opposed to just one or two positions. So but I think they are in a position now where they think that they can, where they don't, they're trying to move away from being some kind of selling club. So they are a genuine kind of compelling, give a compelling case to players to remain for the longer term, because if they've got Champions League football, that solves one of the major hurdles in that.
Just as an aside quickly about the stadium, this was a question that was asked by a supporter on social media, because obviously we talk a lot about infrastructure costs can be deducted and they're not kind of part of the losses. Is there any suggestion that Villa's kind of delay on the stadium plans are because of any PSR rules, or is it totally unrelated?
I mean, you can deduct stadium infrastructure costs from PSR. So Spurs have a 1.2 billion stadium, of which there's about £800 million worth of debt. That doesn't go towards their PSR. Problem is, at the moment, we are living in a very strange world where the geopolitical issues have heightened over the past 4 or 5 years, making I'm not sure whether Spurs would have built the stadium right now. So it's very difficult to, you know, materials have shot up, cost of labour, cost of borrowing significantly. So the cost of borrowing and the interest rates have soared. So that's very difficult to do such a project now. And I think because it's so volatile at the moment, I think it's a brave person that does embark on it right now. But plans have to be in place moving forward. I'm not too sure whether there's the appetite for that right now. I think it's maybe expanding Villa Park is the best bet if they're trying to achieve revenue growth in that respect. Because otherwise, because you've already seen it now, there's a bit of a race to make this kind of Wembley of the North. I mean, Birmingham's the second city, right? So really, there should be...
Yeah.
It's prime to have that kind of venue. But Manchester United and now Jim Ratcliffe's come on board as a minority shareholder. He kind of wants to pursue that. Newcastle are talking about the same thing. So that's where these clubs see kind of revenue generating possibilities. But it's a difficult one to answer. I don't think that's what's stopping them. PSR is what's stopping them pursuing that. I think it's probably other factors, largely how much it costs at the moment. And maybe they're trying to wait for interest rates to reduce, some more stability to arrive in potentially in kind of Ukraine, etc., to reduce the price of steel, because it's such a volatile thing at the moment. It's quite unpredictable, as we've seen with Everton Stadium has been fraught with issues, so is ownership, but PSR isn't what's holding them back on that, because they can deduct the cost for the stadium bills through an allowable deduction.
So whilst they can deduct the loss of building a stadium or expanding a stadium, would there maybe be some concern about not doing it because they would lose match day revenue in tickets and stuff like that? If they close down a section of the stadium, yes, they can offset the costs of doing the redevelopment, but they would lose, I don't know, 3 or 4 million in ticket revenue. Or is that also such a minor concern that that wouldn't be a deciding factor?
I think I don't think any club takes it lightly when there's loss of revenue. So Liverpool's Anfield Road end redevelopment, as well as the main stand, that was done while the stadium was open. It was kind of a construct around what was being done.
Yeah.
So to mitigate the impact of a loss of revenue. Now, you're always going to get a reduction in cost in revenue because the capacity doesn't remain the same throughout. But it's feasible to be done. I mean, clubs need to operate 365 days a year now, so it's impossible to get such a build done just over the summer. So these things have been done in the past, but it's very difficult to think. You know, they can't really. It's not like if they with Spurs, where they're in London, and when they were looking at a new stadium build, they had a plethora of options to ground share. They eventually did Wembley for a season, but they looked at Milton Keynes and things like that. Where would Villa go? You know, I can't see him sharing.
don't say St Andrews, Christ.
Yeah, no, I can't see that happening. And there isn't another. It's a difficult one.
Just one final thing, then, Dave, because you've given me a lot of your time this morning already. This is a wider point away from Villa, really. I wanted to ask whether you felt that the FFP or PSR or whatever word we go with these days. Is it a sustainable model? Is it the right way to be doing things? Because it feels like, and again, this will be kind of not non-Big Six club bias maybe from us towards the situation, that this feels like it's in place to protect those sides, because those sides already have massive revenues when these rules came in. How can a Villa ever catch up to that? How can Newcastle catch up to that? Newcastle get into the Champions League, and yes, they've dropped off this season, but there's talk of them having to sell to buy because they're in trouble financially. So if they can't even do it with the ownership they've got, if Villa can't do it with the ownership we've got, if Brighton have got into Europe, how do they take the next step? It feels like this system is kind of in place to protect Man United, Spurs, Arsenal, etc. Is that fair, or am I being biased towards my own club?
I don't think it was introduced to protect them, because all Premier League teams voted through these changes, or these PSR rules, years ago. But it isn't fit for purpose anymore, because the football world has changed. The Premier League has changed massively over the past decade. So that £105 million worth of losses over 3 years, that has been the same for the past decade or more, £105 million.
No, it's not enough, is it?
The cost of everything has gone up. I mean, you can just look at your gas bills, your mortgage, everything has gone up, yet that £105 million figure has remained the same. So Nobody was too worried about £105 million worth of losses back in 2013-14, because no one was really hemorrhaging that much cash. Guess what they are now? And it's not even to be pushing the boat out. It's to be broadly ambitious. So they aren't fit for purpose. They are. They need. They will be scrapped in the next couple of years, I'm convinced. The Premier League clubs have already spoken about this. They had a meeting in Harrogate last month to discuss among a few things, but among them potential to adopt something like the UEFA squad cost rule, which is where clubs can spend a percentage of turnover related to player amortization and wages. So player amortization and wages against turnover. So that's limited. It would be limited about 70%. For some clubs, there'd be a kind of a sliding scale, the talk was.
Yeah, that's better.
So clubs, maybe your Palaces and your Brentfords could spend more money to not just be battling that kind of block of three or four clubs that skirt between relegation and maybe kind of sniffing the Europa Conference League. But it isn't fit for purpose. So I went to the Business of Football Summit in London last week, and Javier Tebas was there. He's the president of La Liga. So we managed to get some time with him. Asked about financial controls, and because in Spain they have everyone has is kind of audited before the start of the season. They're given a sum which they can spend relative to their earnings, so everyone is clear what they can do. Now, obviously, Real Madrid are and Barcelona are head and shoulders above the rest of that league, and that again that leads to competitive imbalance. So I'm not too sure whether the La Liga model is the way to go, but there has to be. I have to think there has to be different levers in whatever is brought in next. So certain clubs can be allowed more room to spend. And it's not just transfer spend, because I think the transfer market is broken. I think it's a race to the bottom. People just spend more and more and more, and there's no guarantee of quality to spend more. The biggest clubs should be forced to spend less rather than trying to find ways for smaller clubs to spend more, because that's the only way. And if you can find a way where you can start to squeeze the top and the bottom rather than just trying to be the tide to raise up all boats and keep spending, that's great, because there's kind of a finite amount of money slushing around in football. I know we like to think that it's just never ending, and media deals and commercial deals, they just go up forever and ever and ever, but it's hard to make the numbers work. I mean, there's not many football clubs make a profit to lost making business. Liverpool lost 9 million this past year. That's a success, really, given the fact that they only made the Europa League. You know, so they were that's a poor season for them. That's not been accounted for. This season, in the Europa League, so it'll be even poorer still. But finishing fifth and out early in the Carabao Cup and the FA Cup, and dumped out in the round of 16 in the Champions League, that's still a £9 million loss. Yes, the wage bill is huge, but they don't spend extraordinary amounts on acquisition of players comparatively to their rivals. So the only people making money here are Manchester City, and that was on back of a treble-winning campaign and commercial deals, which, you know, we'll say too many about them. But it's a loss-making business, and it's very difficult to make it work. So there has to be a way of, in my view, of kind of squeezing spending at the top and making it less, because we're just a race to the bottom otherwise, and we're going to see more and more clubs struggle. And nobody wants points deductions. I think it's completely, it's kind of anti-competitive. It flies in the face of what it should really. It's knock-on effect for other clubs. So other clubs now are thinking, you know, points deduction, do we spend more, do we spend less? And it causes a knock-on effect for the English game, which will have ramifications for years to come. So I don't think it's the way to go, but obviously clubs need to be have fiscal responsibility. But I think that it should be the biggest club spending less rather than encouraging the other clubs to spend more. But UEFA model will be adopted in some way, shape or form. Be interested to see how that passes muster with the biggest clubs, because undoubtedly they'll want to make sure that they keep the buffer and the walled garden that exists between them and the rest.
Well, Dave, thank you very much for your time this morning. Fascinating insight. There's absolutely loads more we could talk about, but I know you're a very busy man, so thanks for your time, and I'm sure we'll catch up again soon.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
The word you mentioned before was that it was a controllable situation. It's kind of like Emery's football, isn't it? He wants control, and it's an interesting way to frame it, that Villa, their statement read that we are compliant, we haven't broken any rules. The kind of social media outrage from the other clubs is points deduction for Villa, get rid of them. Who? What players can we buy? Like, that tells me that we are a threat to the other clubs, which I quite like. But the important thing is that this isn't the Tony Jarre era or the Randy Lerner era, and NSWE and Unai Emery or whoever is involved in the decision-making at Aston Villa, they won't be blindsided by this. They won't have not seen this coming. They'll have been fully aware that this was on the horizon. And if Villa have not broken any rules, which they confirm they haven't, there won't be any points deduction. There won't be any drastic fire sale of 10 players to kind of scrape the bottom of the barrel and bring in as much revenue as possible. The figures show we've made a big loss, of course, but relatively, we're in a pretty good position, which is a weird thing to say when you lose 100 odd million.
Obviously, our books for 2024 when they come out in a year's time. You know, I'd be surprised if we haven't made a big sale, if I'm being totally honest. Yes, we can get rid of some players who are big earners, but that's a pretty big loss. And, you know, there'll be interest in our players in the summer. And I think I said before, you know, if you know, bids are tabled, then Villa aren't in a situation where they could just say no to everyone and everything. I think they will probably have to listen to some. And obviously, a player would only leave on Villa's terms because they still hold the cards right in these negotiations, because they have players on long contracts and they're still in a good position in terms of hopefully there'll be a Champions League club, as I say. And yeah, this is just why I'm not concerned, because I said it is controllable. I don't know exactly what the squad is worth if you went on, you know, everyone. It's got to be worth, what, 500 plus million. I'm not saying that we have to sell everyone, of course we don't. But if there was one player that had to go to help us rebuild or, you know, remain compliant over this year, then okay, because we have Monchi, we have Emery, you know, we've had so many injuries this season and we're fourth. We were in a title race, you know, last month. So I don't know. I suppose when Villa have sold players previously, top players, then there's always been a huge drop off. When I think of Benteke, Delph, Grealish, when he left, there was a drop off. It wasn't as huge as, you know, getting relegated, but there was a drop off. Yeah, I'm not, you know, worried about it. I think we're in such good hands at the moment in terms of the club's owners. As you say, Dan, they would have known the situation. Obviously, the club spent money in January, not loads, but more than most clubs, actually. Yeah,
you don't spend that money, do you, if you're worried about we're so close to the edge that a points deduction is on the horizon?
Yeah, they mentioned it's like a strategic plan. And yeah, I don't doubt that when Emery came in, he got us Europe. And then last summer, we you know, supplement the squad again because we know what an incredible manager that we have and what we could achieve this season. And that's proven to be the case. And again, you know, Swiris probably thought, well, if we spend this money, then maybe the next year we might have to sell someone or raise money somewhere. But that's a risk I'm willing to take, because yeah, I know, challenge for the top four and win a European trophy. We always say I don't kind of fall in love with players as Villa fans, because like the good ones will always leave, sort of thing. But now we're in a situation where, yeah, you can, you know, I want all this squad to stick together and never leave, etc. But the most important person at the club right now is Unai Emery. And, you know, whoever comes and goes, whatever it may be, we're in good hands, and I don't expect us to be dropping out of Europe.
Yeah, it's a calculated risk, isn't it, is the way I would look at it. Unai Emery came in, got Europe kind of ahead of schedule. That allows you to adjust your parameters a little bit to think, well, if he did that in 7 or 8 months with a full season and a little bit more backing in terms of a Pau Torres and a Moussa Diaby, maybe top four is something we could go for, and let's take that gamble. And as of March the 5th, that looks like that gamble could pay off. It's not kind of like Champions League or bust, although I will ask Dave that tomorrow, and obviously that will have already been in the podcast. But it does feel like if we do get Champions League, that will go some way to helping our financial situation. Maybe a couple of high earners off the books will help, and then a big sale could come next summer. But a big sale could come this summer, and that might just be what happens. And I feel like there's probably no better management team and whatever Monchi is, scouting team, director of football team, whatever you want to call it. There's probably no better combination of people to kind of foresee that situation and help build kind of Villa 2.0, if you like. If we do have to sell Douglas Luiz for 100 million, those guys will invest that money hopefully very well and make Villa even better off the back of it.
You're right, Dan. If we were to sell Luiz, well, we have to reinvest that money somewhere, because that's a gaping hole in the midfield.
Yeah,
however, obviously most of that would have to go to the club's accounts, and so we're not losing money all the time, and we are staying compliant. So yeah, I'm with you though. You know, this group can kind of work with what they have, but if we were to sell a star player, I back them to replace them or improve the team elsewhere. Again, I always say last summer we didn't expect certain things to happen in the squad, and we're all, you know, all the better off for it right now. So it's all about trusting the people at the club and the relationships that are there, because they all know what they are here for as well. Like, for example, Monchi doesn't join without knowing this situation, same as Emery.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it's not something I'm concerned about at all, really. But obviously, you'd like to see your players stick together. And I know there's a lot of fans that are, you know, or will say that it protects the big six. And I think it does, to an extent. However, these rules I do think are needed as well, because if you opened it up completely, Newcastle, let's say Newcastle are owned by, they have a state-linked ownership group, and they would be able to spend lots and lots of money and buy probably the best players. You know, I just think it would get out of hand, basically, if you opened it up and said, spend what you like and on who you like. Let's open the transfer window up like all season round. You know what I mean? It'd be that thing, and football would just die. So these rules are important, but those clubs that are the big six, because of their revenue, when these rules have come in, well, their revenues were so far ahead of anyone else already. Yeah. It's so hard for us to bridge that gap. It is an uphill task to continually do what we're doing, but as long as Unai Emery is here, I have no sort of worries, no qualms about much real related to football last of it.
Yeah, totally agree. And we'll call it a day there for this mini podcast all about the financial side of Aston Villa. This is something we will continue to talk about in the coming weeks and months as the situation develops and changes and we make player sales or whatever it is. We do a weekly Q&A on the show where people will ask us about this in more detail in the weeks to come, I'm sure. But John, thank you for joining me on this one. Thanks to Dave Powell for earlier in the show as well for his insight. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as you can. An episode all about money rather than football. Get involved in the YouTube comments with your thoughts. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for watching this episode or listening to this episode of the Club Blue podcast. And we'll be back for the post-match Ajax show on Thursday evening. Cheers, everyone.